Welcome to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat. Get you caught up on everything you might have missed over the weekend. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You'll have everything about this show, but if you don't feel comfortable calling in, totally fine. Slide into my DMs at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. The wonderful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing. We have a great hour planned ahead, including college football playoff conversations, a battle between Jimbo Fisher and Steve Sarkisian. Don't worry, it's not in-state, it's not hook'em or gig'em. I promise you, you're going to want to hear this. And a potential three-way trade for Donovan Mitchell in the NBA. Is it worth discussing? But I start the hour off today with this. Sometimes you get reminded that even though pop culture has been taking full stride for the last decade, there are some people who don't know about certain prospects in pop culture. Michael Hernandez is one of those people. Because Michael and I were discussing over the side of the break about breakfast foods. And Michael told me one thing. Michael, what restaurant did you not know served breakfast?
Taco Bell.
You want to know why you didn't know that?
Because it's trash.
Because it's not good. It's not good. Let's be real. You know the meme about like people saying, oh, you only go get Taco Bell at like 1 in the morning when you're half drunk or something like that? Like you've heard like...
Or Jack in a Box.
You can't eat it sober. Like, perfect example. Like, I was sober as all hell leaving Garth Brooks because I had to go to work yesterday morning.
You got Taco Bell.
But I got Taco Bell at 1 in the morning. We left the concert around like 11:45. Oh, I got three tacos, just regular tacos, and a chicken quesadilla.
Okay.
I got the very bland white boy kind of meal, and it was very delicious, a large Dr. Pepper along with it. But to be fair, like, nobody eats Taco Bell when you're fully active. Like, if you're like, I'm going to have a productive day. I'm going to go ahead and work out. I'm going to go ahead and take my dog out on a 10-mile run. I'm going to start training for a decathlon.
And then I'm getting Taco Bell.
And then I'm getting Taco Bell. No, you're just going to shut down your intestines and ruin your day. Why would you start your morning off that same way? Because it's the same food. All it is, hey, you know that brown beef that we call ground beef? Yeah, we're just going to add egg to it. Bippity-boppity-boop. Breakfast tacos. Come at me, bro. It's literally the exact same thing. So, Michael, don't feel bad, my friend. You don't need to worry about not knowing what Taco Bell is. Because the bottom line is, that type of breakfast food, not meant for me.
Time for the two-minute warning around the NFL. No! Here's Cole Thompson.
Each and every day at this time, we go around the NFL, breaking down some of the biggest storylines you might have missed. And we do so in 2 minutes or less, hence the reason we call it the two-minute warning. Oh, Michael! Start the clock.
Cleveland Browns running back Kareem Hunt has requested a trade, according to Cleveland.com. Added, the team has told Hunt it will not grant the request. Prior to Hunt's ask for a trade, the running back has spent several practices sitting out of team activities, but he returned to full participation on Sunday. Hunt's trade request comes a month in advance of the regular season and with 1 year remaining on his deal. He is currently due a $1.35 million base salary with $4.9 million in roster bonuses, per Spotrac.com. Hunt played in only 8 games in 2021 due to ankle and calf injuries. He logged 386 rushing yards for 5 touchdowns, adding 22 catches for 174 yards. Since joining the Browns, Hunt has spelled Chubb in tremendous fashion, especially during the 2020 season when he amassed 1,145 yards from scrimmage and 11 scores.
I think I made this abundantly clear. There's a lot of teams out there that I feel would want a guy like Kareem Hunt on their roster. And on any other, you know, team where he'd probably be a feature back, you can make an argument that he's a top 12 running back in the NFL. In fact, in my personal opinion, before last season, I had him ranked inside my top 10. I thought that Cleveland was so powerful with its 1-2 combination that they arguably had the best backfield in the last 20 years in the NFL because of just how dangerous a guy like Kareem Hunt could be. But the major factor is I think Cleveland also understands that. Because, Michael, if I may ask you, and ladies and gentlemen, if I might ask you, isn't there something going on in Cleveland besides the likes of this trade rumor dealing with someone else?
There's a lot of stuff going on in Cleveland.
Yeah, you know, there was a massage convention this past weekend. There was, you know, a name that has been synonymously linked to that.
How convenient.
How convenient. Why would you trade away one of your best assets to keep you as a playoff contender? Cleveland is known for its rushing attack. It has been known for its rushing attack since 2018 when Nick Chubb broke onto the field. And then you add in Kareem Hunt and what he's able to do in that backfield as a 1-2 combination. Then you also look at what you have in D'Ernest Johnson, who broke out immensely last year with Hunt hurt. And you also have a guy in Dimitri Felton, who's a very, very, very capable, third down running back. You utilize that rushing attack to your advantage. And in large part, the main reason why, because when you look at the other names that are on that roster, especially when you look at the wide receivers, how limited they are, when you also look at the quarterback play, how limited that is, there's reasons to say, you know what? This is why we're making this move. This is why we're not allowing any trade rumors to come. Because if you are going to trade someone like Kareem Hunt, you better get immense value back in return because he's going to be that awesome on a different roster. And on your roster right now, he's probably one of the X factors to why you are going to be in the playoff race. And if you lose a guy like that, well, that hurts your playoff chances. Until they know the situation with Deshaun Watson, how long he's going to play, if they're going to make a trade for another quarterback, if they're just going to run it back with Jacoby Brissett, it to me feels very, very, very questionable. Why would they trade him? Because if at worst comes to worst, you lose your best asset and potentially eliminate yourself in the playoffs by trading away a guy who's actually very good.
There won't be a decision made as to who the Carolina Panthers QB1 would be this season until week 2 of the preseason has passed. Panthers head coach Matt Rhule on Saturday typed his team's August 19th preseason tilt against the host New England Patriots as a proving ground in the QB battle between Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. Darnold and Mayfield have alternated reps since the latter joined the squad via trade prior to training camp in July. Darnold has let it be known that the two are cool with each other and expects the competition to bring out the best in both of them, while Mayfield has been appreciative of the transparency in the process. The rule didn't firmly state that he'll make a decision after the Patriots game. It will now stand as a marker on the calendar and perhaps the league's most anticipated quarterback competition.
I think so. I know so. I don't see us making any major decisions at any position. I'm not putting a timetable on the quarterback position. But at anything, even though you guys asked me about left tackle, until after we get from the Patriots week. I think the Patriots week is a like true litmus test for us of, hey, where are we really? You know, we're going against another team. We're practicing. I think that'll really show us where guys are. So we'll continue to split the reps, and then we'll make some evaluations off of today's tape. We'll make some evaluations after training camp in Wofford ends on Wednesday, and then probably after the game and the Patriots.
I get what he's saying because, to be fair, you don't want to rush your quarterback play. You just want to be about as easy as possible. But, like, what are we doing here, people? Does anyone remember what we saw last season with Sam Darnold? I got bought into it. You got bought into it. We all fell for the trap. The reality factor was Adam Gase and his overall demeanor and his horrendous coaching style was not the major problem with Sam Darnold. It was the yips. It was inconsistencies. It was his own balance. That was the problem with the likes of Sam Darnold in Carolina. So you go out and you trade for Baker Mayfield. And this is a guy in Matt Rhule that I personally believe has got to have better results this season. You have an aggressive owner in David Tepper that also bought Charlotte FC, a brand new MLS team. And what did he do? He fired his coach midway through the first season because things just weren't working in his favor. Things just weren't building toward his style of play. Things were not working towards what he wanted to build as an organization. You have an aggressive owner. He is not going to stand beside. He is not going to sit there and go, oh, you know what? We're cool. We're going to go ahead and let you be 5 wins every single season. No, they're going to make sure that someone gets in that building and makes a ton of plays from the get-go. That's been the case, and that's always going to be the case for the likes of a guy like David Tepper. And when you look at what he brings to the table in Matt Rhule, there's easily a fireball offense. if you don't get the quarterback position right. That's why you traded for Baker Mayfield. What are we doing? We know Baker's the better option. We know that Baker, when fully healthy, is arguably a top 20 quarterback. Maybe not a, you know, top 15, but certainly top 20. Like, he would at least be number 20 on that list. Sam Darnold could very well be listed as the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. And nobody, I mean literally nobody, would be surprised by that. Let's stop with this. Like, seriously, let's stop with this. Drives look better with Baker. Baker feels better with the offense. Baker feels like he gives you a better shot to win. Why are we making this an argument? Baker Mayfield should be the starting quarterback week one for Carolina. And we don't need to see it in the preseason. I already have seen it. I know he should be the starting quarterback week one.
At 35 years old, Calais Campbell can still get the job done. He just might not be doing it for much longer. Campbell is keeping his eyes on 2022, and for whatever lies around the bend, he'll find out when he gets there. After recording 4-plus sacks in every season from 2009 to 2020, the three-time All-Pro and six-time Pro Bowler finished with just 1.5 sacks last season. It was the first time he failed to earn a Pro Bowl or All-Pro honor since 2013, and it would be all stunning development if he wasn't already 35 years old. Campbell's currently in the first year of a two-year deal signed in April to stay in Baltimore, and he turns 36 in September. He has earned the right to focus solely on one season, empty the tank, as he said, before thinking about whether he'll be back a year from now.
You know, I'm in a place right now where I'm like, I'm just taking it this year. You know I got this year in me. I don't know if there's anything left after that, but I'm going to leave it on the tape. I'm going to leave it on the field. I'm going to empty the tank. And when it's all said and done after this year, I mean, you know, I'll reconvene in the offseason to see where I'm at. But right now, I'm preparing like this is my last year. So I'm going to give everything I have.
It's kind of sad when we talk about a guy like Calais Campbell because his accolades should be so much higher than what they are. I mean, he'll turn 36 on September 1st, and you look at the overall demeanor of what he's been through as a member of the Arizona Cardinals and as the Jacksonville Jaguars. Part of the reason why we don't talk about him probably more in a prominent light is simply because, well, he was on lackluster rosters. But if you look at his overall individual accolades, he arguably has been one of the better players in the NFL. He's a three-time All-Pro, first-team All-Pro in 2017, two-time second-team All-Pro. He's an eight-time Pro Bowler from 2014 through 2020. He was part of the All-Decade team. And he has 773 total tackles, 93.5 sacks, 55 pass deflections, 14 forced fumbles, 12 fumble recoveries, 3 defensive touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. So the guy has been a staple, and he has the most sacks in a career game by a Jacksonville Jaguar and the most sacks in a career season by a Jacksonville Jaguar. On top of that, he has been the definition of consistency with averaging around 5 to 7 sacks per year. Somewhere you get up to that 8-9 standard, but he has at least finished with 4 or more sacks since coming in the league in 2009, minus last season. There's potential for it. I really hope that Baltimore finds a way to get its footing underneath themselves this year, because if they have a very talented roster, but a guy like Calais Campbell, you just want to see him be successful. You want him to go out playing in the Super Bowl. You want him to feel what it's like to be on the biggest stage. And I do think that Baltimore very well could be a Super Bowl sleeper. I wouldn't put them in that top tier category like Buffalo and, I'd say Buffalo, maybe Kansas City. Maybe you could throw Los Angeles into that conversation. Those are the teams that you're expecting to be like the front runners to make it from the AFC. Outside of them, like everyone else is like kind of that second tier. Baltimore's like the very top of that second tier. And I do believe that they absolutely could get to the Super Bowl without anyone being surprised. But I just want to see it for Calais Campbell at this point. I want to see him do two things. I want him to get 6.5 sacks this year so he can finish his career with 100 total sacks. And I want to see him play in the Super Bowl. I'm not going to be saying I'm rooting for the Baltimore Ravens, but at the same time, if they are to win, I'm not going to be that disappointed. Lamar Jackson and Calais Campbell absolutely have earned it after their stellar careers. One due to a contract extension and one due to one curtain call.
Deontay Johnson inked a two-year, $36.71 million extension Thursday, keeping him under contract in Pittsburgh for the next 3 seasons. Johnson hopes it's a lot longer than that. If Johnson is to play his entire career in Pittsburgh, he'll need another extension in a couple of years. The 26-year-old agreed to a shorter extension to reach free agency again before he turns 30. The $18.3 million per year average on the extension puts Johnson 17th among receivers, below the $20 million mark several wideouts signed for this offseason. But Johnson doesn't believe he took a bad deal, particularly because it gives him another chance at a big payday in 2025. Johnson has improved in each of his first three seasons, including surpassing the 1,100-yard mark in 2021. If he continues on that trajectory, Johnson's pocket will get filled once again in a few years.
You know, it's just the grass is not always greener on the other side. You know, I was thinking about that too, but at the end of the day, I love being a Steeler. You know, I love it here. I'm going to change my career. But, you know, just being around, it's just my teammates that just being around the atmosphere, the energy that they show every day. And you want to be around a group of guys like that each and every day. And I feel like I said, I feel like I made the right choice. I want to continue to be here for a long time.
This is going to be a trend that you start seeing with receivers. Personally, I actually do believe this because Stephon Diggs did this and it ended up working in his favor. So Diggs had an offer on the table from the Vikings. I think it was like a 6-year deal. I think he made it instead a 4-year extension, if I'm not mistaken. It was either a 4 or 5 year extension. Either way, when the time his contract was up, they basically said, okay, you're going to be 30 years old. What else can we do? So he signs another extension for 4 years worth $96 million. Now he's going to be locked and loaded at age 28 through age 34 season. He's good. He's all paid up. We already know that. When you have a guy like Deontay Johnson, guys like A.J. Brown, guys like Deebo Samuel, they're taking deals like this. And the main reason why, they want another extension. I actually like the deal for what you have with Deontay Johnson, but I really like the deal for Pittsburgh and for the longevity. There you have it. 2-minute warning right here on Just Saying It. This segment brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
With their newest unlimited plan, everyone's welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 a line per month for up to 4 lines. With auto pay plus taxes and fees, their best price unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family, the network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required, unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on Welcome Unlimited and are eligible for only select promotions. Includes domestic talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. So I thought this was really interesting. 800-224-2004 basketball conversation. Got to bring it up. Again, the closer we get toward the NFL and college football season, this is going to be a very staple college football NFL show. That was the reason I was hired. That was the reason I was brought in. So far, I think I've done a pretty decent job at it, regardless of what Michael Hernandez has to say on the other side of the glass, because you know he's thinking of something with a witty comeback. Aren't you, Michael?
Always.
Always thinking of that. But until then, let's talk a little bit about basketball, because basketball still is prominent, arguably the second most talked about sport in the United States, I would say behind football. I think it would be third on the list behind college football and the NFL. But there is a rumor of a three-way trade. Finally, a little bit of notion and a little bit of push from the likes of the Donovan Mitchell sweepstakes. So according to reports from HoopsHype.com, I believe it was, who was the writer? I think it was Michael Skoda. He's a very, very good reporter. I've reached out to a lot of people to see how factual this was, and he backs it up. There's a lot of potential for him to, you know, actually say, oh yeah, I'm a credentialed reporter, I know what I'm talking about, so I believe it. There have been conversations of a three-way trade of the New York Knicks acquiring Donovan Mitchell. What would happen would be they would add in the Los Angeles Lakers. So the Lakers would end up getting a player, whether that be Brogdon Bogdanovic, whether that be Jordan Clarkson, Patrick Beverley, or Malik Beasley, from the likes of the Utah Jazz, and I think a first-round pick. In return, they would trade Russell Westbrook and a player to be named later to Utah. Meanwhile, Utah then would trade Donovan Mitchell and a player to be named later to the New York Knicks, and the Knicks would trade a combination of somehow of either Obi Toppin, Emmanuel Quickly, Cam Reddish, and Quentin Grimes. I believe one would go to Utah and one would go to Los Angeles. So who ends up winning in this deal? To me personally, there really isn't a big winner. I do think that Obi Toppin, who hasn't really found his full potential since being drafted out of Dayton, needs a culture change, probably would be the biggest winner in terms of going to an organization like Utah, because I think he'd be the guy they'd want in Utah. And the main reason why, they need a new big to replace the likes of Rudy Gobert. It would allow him to reevaluate his career. But one of the major factors of what I'm hearing, or what's been reported, is Quentin Grimes, the young star who was drafted out of Houston last year with the number 25 overall pick, has actually been improving so much during the offseason, they don't want to trade him from New York. Last season, he averaged about 6 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist per game, and about 17 minutes. They want him to have a larger role with this organization. So does he hurt leaving a team like the Knicks? In a way, yes, because of when you have two small guys in the backcourt, in Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell, neither of whom are known for their defensive style of play, you need a guy on the wing who can do a little bit more defensively. And that kind of is what you have with a guy like Grimes. Meanwhile, the only person that wins in this deal in Los Angeles, in my opinion, is LeBron James. Because LeBron wants to get rid of Russell Westbrook at this point. It feels like the partial problem of Russ being on the roster is his negative toxicity is going to hurt and hamper Los Angeles' production. And again, we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about this again. When I look at a guy or a team like Los Angeles, in a city that is thriving in sports, the Dodgers are hot, USC is back, UCLA is getting a lot of fan base and a lot of traction, the Kings recently made the playoffs, the Rams are the defending Super Bowl champions, and you have the Chargers that seem to be trending finally in the right direction, and if not, honestly, they should probably move back to San Diego because it just is not going to work out. You can't be the fourth most talked about thing on sports talk radio in LA. You can't. You're the Lakers. So getting rid of a guy like Russell Westbrook probably is prominent to you, but what do you get in return? Does Patrick Beverley fit of what you're looking for? Do you also have the likes of someone such as Bogdanović? Does he come in and fill what you're looking for? Or does a Malik Beasley come in? There was a report not too long ago that there's a potential trade offer on the table with the likes of, not Kyrie Irving, but the Indiana Pacers getting rid of Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. In return, I think it would be for Russell Westbrook and a few other players, and I think a first-round pick. I think that's the other deal, and I think that Los Angeles doesn't want to give up any more draft capital they don't have. I personally like that deal better than this one because if you're getting two guys who not only have starting minutes, but also add a little bit more value. A guy like Miles Turner comes in. It allows you to play him at the five. It allows you to move Anthony Davis on a small team to the four. LeBron plays your three in your backcourt. You worry about a little bit later. Plus, Buddy Hield initially was expected to go to Los Angeles before last second they went and got Russell Westbrook. So ultimately, a deal that was supposed to happen last year finally happens this year with Hield being on that backcourt. But I do think that if you look at this overall process, no one truly walks away a winner. If I had to pick one, Donovan Mitchell going to a team like New York that's trying to prove that they are a playoff contender and really fix what's been wrong with them for a while, which is intermediate shooting and really backcourt consistency, is a win. But overall, I don't see this as valuable for anyone on the roster. Because when you look at it, Los Angeles does not get that much better. Well, I mean, they lose a guy in Russell Westbrook, who, you know, is a cancer, I guess, in the locker room. You lose him, which is a positive for you. But Utah then takes on a massive contract, and they don't really get as much value in return with some of these young players. Meanwhile, how much better defensively is New York? Because Donovan Mitchell would work extremely well in New York if you didn't have Jalen Brunson. But you have Jalen Brunson, who plays a very similar game, even though he is worse defensively. I don't know who this deal gets done. I could see it happening because I know Donovan Mitchell wants to be on the move. But I will say this. There really isn't a one-sided winner. In fact, there could just be three overall losers.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Well, it's that part of the show, Cole's Calendar, where we break down the national holiday of the day, and we pick one because of all you dumb mother of lovers out there decide to tell me that every day should be a national holiday, and there really isn't. There's one, and you know what? Even then, it's a little tempting to say, no, there isn't. Michael, what are our options for today, August 8th?
We have five of them, but after you announce what today is, I'm going to throw something in little extra what I saw from Twitter.
What you saw? Oh, ooh, I'm excited for this one. I'm very excited for this one.
So first one is National Tarantula Appreciation Day.
Tarantula Appreciation Day.
Yes.
Well, here's the thing, Michael. I love my twin brother, Kyle. Kyle is a wonderful person. He's a kind soul. Kyle's afraid of spiders. Kyle is so terrified of spiders that when I lived in a house with him and four other people, I was asked all the time, will you be the spider killer? Because I lived with a bunch of people who had arachnophobia. And I'm not going to do that to them because I'm a nice person. So because of my sweet brother, we will not be having this as National Tarantula Appreciation Day. I appreciate tarantulas. I think that they do a lot of good for our nature. But we will not be doing National Tarantula Appreciation Day today.
He wouldn't like living in my house because since there's a new construction, and you know how it used to be nothing but fields and stuff like that in this new houses, it's like spiders everywhere.
No, see, it doesn't bother me. Like, spiders to me, like, Kirsten is horrified of bugs. I mean, like, literally any little bug she gets horrified of. There's only one thing in this world that actually scares the living piss out of me, and it's water moccasins. And besides that, I'm good with anything. I can function with anywhere. But if you were to say, hey, there's a mock over there, you want to see me scream like a little girl, like a six-year-old, and then go, what's going on? Did Lassie fall down the well? Come on, let's go. No, I mean, trust me, it would be, that's the way you get me.
I don't even know what I'm scared of, to be honest. But
that's it, though.
Second one is National Mochi Day.
Can you explain mochi? Because I'm not sure if I'm thinking of the same thing of what you're thinking of mochi.
The mochis are those little things that are filled with ice cream. Is that the little mochi balls filled with ice cream?
Oh, those things? No. No. Why do we need to give a holiday for a trend that a millennial came up with like 5 years ago?
Mochis are good. What you mean?
I don't like it. Well, again, I also don't like ice cream. So that's probably a really good start.
Next one is National Frozen Custard Day.
Yeah, Michael, this is my show. We're going to do it my way. That's the way that we think about it right here. I'm in charge of the national holidays. That's why I'm the honest American stockbroker.
That's why I chose it last time, but okay.
That's why you chose it last time. I was being nice to you. Now you like get to your head. Frozen custard is better than... Okay, when you say frozen custard, you mean frozen yogurt? Is it like the same thing?
It just says tasty frozen dessert.
Whatever. I mean, I'm not going to deny it that much, so sure. I mean, I can understand why you like it and why people like it, but what else do we got? Maybe I'll do frozen dessert.
National Dollar Day.
National Dollar Day?
Yes, National Dollar Day.
So bring in that bank?
Pretty much. Just join us in observing a significant moment in the history of the U.S.
Got to be waking up and getting those Washingtons. Can't be getting the Franklins, man. Can't be getting the Lincolns. Can't be getting the Hamiltons. You got to get the Washington.
Imagine you wake up with a Benjamin, and then you see, nah, I wanted a Washington.
Son of a gun. It's National Dollar Day, not National $100 Day. Sorry, Ben. Got to throw you away. Swish. I don't know. I mean, trust me, every day for me is National Dollar Day because I'm trying to get a quick buck. But what else do we have for the final thing to close this one out, which you usually make last because it's the winner, but you never know.
I do. All right. Happiness Happens Day.
Happiness Happens Day. I'm not going to pick that one because every day should be Happiness Happens Day. You make your own happiness. Make yourself happy. Find what brings you joy in life and engulf in it without the standard of thinking that anyone else is around. Do what makes you, you. And that's all it should take. So I hereby decree, because of unfortunately, I don't really have other options except for what you're going to tell me on Twitter. I'll go with one that everyone loves. National Frozen Dessert Day, because you want to know what? We all love dessert. We all deserve a cheat day. Go ahead and get yourself something frozen. I'll tell you what I like frozen. Frozen grapes. You put a little bit of powder on there. There's this trend that I saw recently on TikTok.
I tasted frozen grapes probably like 2 weeks ago for the first time. Delicious.
They're delicious, right? So yes. I saw this trend not too long ago, and they're supposedly supposed to taste like sour candies. You take sour Jell-O mix, and you mix it in a bowl of water and then put it on the grapes and then you take them out and dry them off. And apparently they're like the sour, like it's like sour feel against them. So it's a healthy treat for you. But guess what? It's frozen. And since I don't like ice cream, I can have frozen grapes. That'd be my dessert. National Frozen Dessert Day right here on Just Saying, a part of the Sports Map Radio Network. Now, what is there on Twitter?
So before we move on, you remember last year on this, around this time, I was scrolling to Twitter and I saw 1 year ago today, people were really doing the crate challenge. Do you remember
the crate challenge? The one where they would walk up the crates and then eat crap? No!
A year ago, around this time today.
You know what's really funny, Michael? We forgot our 1 year anniversary. We didn't celebrate it. We've been together for 1 year working on this show. And that is probably more prominent because I got to watch a bunch of idiots somehow make a bunch of mistakes. You know what was my favorite one? And then we got to move on because there's so much I really want to talk about. Did you see the gender reveal one?
No, I probably missed that one.
So there was a guy who apparently was carrying a box up, like, up the crates. And he had, like, he was supposed to do, like, at the very top, like, the Simba thing. And he falls. And the entire crate falls over. And, like, all this blue glitter flies out anywhere. The mom is losing her absolute mind because she wanted a girl. Meanwhile, homie is sitting on the floor, cannot breathe because he just shattered his back on all the crates. And his friends are losing their mind because their best friend is now going to be a boy dad. I thought it was the funniest thing out there. And at that moment, I realized, you know what? This trend needs to end. It needs to go away. But you know what doesn't need to end? My infatuation for Arkansas football. 800-224-2004. That, ladies and gentlemen, is called a seamless transition. Kind of like how seamlessly Sam Pittman has transitioned from being an offensive line coach to one of the more underappreciated head coaches in college football. When you think of what the standard is at Arkansas for the last 10 years, since 2011 and Bobby Petrino's exit, it has been a dumpster fire. They haven't been able to put up monumental winning seasons. They've barely been able to scratch the 500 surface. And talent continuously has departed Fayetteville to go to schools like South Carolina and Columbia, schools like Lexington and Kentucky, and Knoxville and Tennessee. But Arkansas, I can tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, is slowly getting back to the standard of what we know of Hogs football. And a lot of that has to do with Sam Pittman. Sometimes the out-of-the-box hire is actually the right one. I'll tell you right now, personally, when I was hired to work in this industry, I wasn't sure that I was going to be the perfect fit. I wasn't a guy that had a ton of background, but I knew what I wanted to talk about was sports. And lo and behold, our show, me and Michael right here, make a great team. So much so that we get callers calling in late in the hours of the night. The right fit sometimes matters more than the hot name. Sam Pittman was the right fit for Arkansas. Because you want to know why? They needed to get back to its roots. It needed to get back to what was Hog football. Smash mouth domination in the trenches, win at the line of scrimmage, and find a way to build off that. What do you have right now in Arkansas? A great defensive line, a stellar offensive line, a quality run game, and a quarterback that's mobile enough to work with all single aspects. I look at this Arkansas team, and I'll tell you right now, they're not just an SEC West sleeper. They're not just an SEC champion sleeper. They're not just potentially a college football playoff sleeper. They had the chance to be a national champion sleeper in 2022. 800-224-2004. If you don't believe me, let's start off with this. They returned four of their five starting offensive linemen this year. So that's a big plus for the likes of Arkansas. Number two, they have the returning quarterback in KJ Jefferson. And Jefferson might be the most underappreciated quarterback in the SEC, not named Hendon Hooker. Last season threw for 21 touchdowns against four interceptions. He had a QBR rating of 76.7, placing him inside the top 20 of all passers. He completed 67.4% of his throws and threw for over 2,600 passing yards. Not to mention, he also led the team on the ground in rushing with 664 yards at an average of 4.5 yards per play. Now, I know what you're thinking. I said 664 was the league high for Arkansas last year on the ground. Shouldn't they have a 1,000-yard rusher? They could. But instead, they're so balanced at the rushing attack that you had guys like Traylon Smith and Raheem Sanders and Dominique Johnson and A.J. Green all average at least 4.8 yards per carry. Three of the four rushed for at least 97 carries or more. Three of the four finished with at least 575 rushing yards, and three or more finished with at least five rushing touchdowns. So you look at the balance and the consistency of what you have with Smith and Raheem Sanders. Sanders is coming back this year after a stellar freshman year. Traylon Smith, unfortunately, is gone, but you do have A.J. Green who's going to step up, and Dominique Johnson, who's also going to step up. There's value in your backfield. What about the receiver position? Everyone wants to talk about that. Well, you lose Treylon Burks, but you add in a guy in Jaden Hazelwood. And if anyone knows me and is listening to the show, which I all know that you do, I have been high on Jaden Hazelwood for quite some time. I have loved his potential. I think he is a great vertical threat. He's a good between-the-yardage kind of player. He's a great possessional receiver. Not to mention, they also have other receivers coming back, such as Warren Thompson. They also have the likes of a guy in Blake Kern coming back, and Davion Warren also is expected to be back. Not to mention, if you didn't hear, there's a young tight end by the name of Tyrus Washington who has been making strides in Fayetteville this offseason. Oh, by the way, Fayetteville, Arkansas, the one thing that they've been consistent at, punching out tight end talent in the SEC. Defensively, they got better. They not only added in the likes of Drew Sanders from Alabama, but they return eight starters, one of which is Jalen Calaton, who is a phenomenal safety, hard hitter, can play in a zone coverage, and does extremely well as a kind of maneuvering guy. He can be your rover type player. There's so much to like about him. Defensive line, you lose John Ridgeway, but you have a lot of potential with guys backing him up. So this is a two-deep roster. And then you look at their schedule. Everyone wants to focus in on the games that, like, oh, you know, well, they're going to have a tough challenge against Cincinnati week one. Are they? Cincinnati lost Desmond Ridder, Darian Beavers, Sauce Gardner, Jerome Ford. This is not the same team that we saw in the college football playoff. They also have a game against South Carolina at home, which is big for them. They have a game against Texas A&M in Arlington, and they now have the win total, so they have the advantage in that game. They face off against Alabama in Fayetteville, not saying that they're going to beat Alabama, but they could, and I wouldn't be shocked. They go to BYU in Provo, which is the big, big test, in my opinion, this year for Arkansas. And they close out the year at home against LSU, Ole Miss, and then travel to Missouri. They have an opportunity to get eight wins this year, and I don't think anybody would be shocked. They also have an opportunity to get nine wins this year, and I don't think anybody would be shocked. And even though I do think that 7-5 is a lackluster season, when you do think about the years of the Chad Morris failing to even get a win in SEC play, losing to an FCS school, basically being compared to Vanderbilt, they'll take a 7-5 win if it means their recruiting class finishes top 10. But I actually believe that this is a 10-2 team. And I believe that potentially it's an 11-1 win team. They can beat Texas A&M. They can beat LSU. They can beat Missouri. All three of their rivals. They can beat Alabama on any given Saturday. Do I think that they will? I'm not sure yet. But I do think that they can. BYU is the big testament game. If they can get past BYU, I believe they have a very good shot to finish 10-2 or even 11-1. And if they're 11-1, there's a very good shot that they're playing for a college football playoffs berth as the representative of the SEC West in the SEC Championship in Atlanta. Don't sleep on this team. Before we get on out of here, we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to mention this. There's two quarterback gurus that need to be under the pressure cooker this season. One is Steve Sarkisian, and one is Jimbo Fisher. They just so happen to be in the Lone Star State, but let me explain why. 800-224-2004. So last season, they couldn't get good play out of their starting quarterbacks. Zach Calzada transfers to the likes of Auburn, and Casey Thompson transfers to the likes of Nebraska. Let's just say Casey Thompson is the answer for Cornhusker football. And he takes this team from being a 3-9 roster to a 9-3 roster. And it is very possible. They were the most scrutinized team last year. They almost won every single game. They lost eight games by one possession or more, or fewer. Say he goes 9-3. And Sark, with Quinn Ewers, struggles. Was Sark the problem, or was Casey Thompson the problem? Let's say the same thing about Zach Calzada. Calzada had arguably the biggest game of his career and the biggest game in college football against Alabama. Let's say he goes to Auburn and fixes the program, and they go 8-4. Meanwhile, Max Johnson and Haynes King, two quarterbacks who are the gurus with Jimbo Fisher, struggle. Was Fisher the problem, or was Calzada the problem? I'm not going to say that either or is going to happen, but if the two latter quarterbacks at other programs find success and the quarterbacks that with the gurus are failing, maybe we need to consider they're not really gurus after all. We'll close out just saying it right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
One final thought, as I do every day here on Just Saying It. Thanks for one more stellar career. Last night, the Seattle Storm celebrated Sue Bird's 19th season with the franchise ahead of her final regular season home game with the organization. A franchise record 18,000 fans packed into Climate Pledge Arena for Storm's game against the Las Vegas Aces. She was honored on the on-court tribute, a video featuring highlights and special moments of Seattle's four championships led by her, as well as former teammates making a trip out there, including Angel Wilson and a few others. Unfortunately, the Aces did ruin their night, 89-81 victory, as Angel Wilson scored 29 points, and you had a great comeback from Chelsea Gray in the fourth quarter. Got to give a lot of credit there. That does it for me. I'll be back here tomorrow to break down more college football, NFL, training camp conversations, so much more. It's Cole Thompson with Just Saying It, signing off. See you tomorrow. Later!